Hey everybody, welcome, to the BBOL show featuring NJ Chat with Nikita and Jewel. I'm Nikita.
And I'm Jewel.
Welcome. I mean, we're super excited today. We're going to be doing Alien Earth episodes 1 through 4. I think it's great to split them up. I mean, and also it's been out long enough that we're not too stressed about, you know, doing spoilers. Remember, we are doing spoilers, so at this point, if you don't want to listen, go ahead and turn it off and then come back to the show later and check out what we have to say. We're going to be, this was a great show, one that I think we both enjoyed a great deal. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it on to Jewel to give us the intro and breakdown, as she always does so fabulously. Jewel?
thank you so much, Nikita, and thank you for another opportunity to do an NJ chat with you today. Alien Earth, an episodic about the xenomorphs that we've all come to dread, love, fear, and really think coolness, and particularly now in the spooky season as we're coming up to Halloween. Alien Earth is an American science fiction horror television series created by Noah Hawley. It is the first television series of the Alien franchise. And if you guys remember the old franchise with the alien creature that we all have known are xenomorphs, symbiotic, cocoon-like, fast-growing animal beings that need to be incubated within a hot body, meaning warm, not looks. and then they extricate themselves from the body in the most gruesome of fashions through their people's stomach, usually. All that to say, this is what a face huggers suck your face for a little bit, plant a little egg, it grows, and it pops out your belly like the most nastiest of grossest of things. And I'm here for it all. And hopefully, Nikita. Yes, Nikita, what did I say? I must have said something wrong. What did I say?
No, I used the wrong emoji. I was trying to do clap, clap, clap. sorry about that.
I'm like, oh no, I did another. I'm slightly dyslexic. So I switched names back and forth. I'm not good with names. So I'm like, what did I say wrong this time? I done had Rick Ross in somebody's show and he wasn't there. And I'm just messing up. Okay. Alien Earth. the first television series for the Alien franchise, again with the xenomorphs. We've had aliens in space. We've had aliens come down to Earth. We've had aliens in the are we discovering, not discovering space? And this particular one stars an amazing array of casts, and usually Nikita goes over the cast, so we'll leave that for her. But the development of the series was reported to have begun in early 2019 with Ridley Scott, who was attached as executive producer for FX on Hulu. It had started pre-production by April 2023 with Chandler cast in the lead role of the following month. And that's Sydney Chandler. She's the lead individual. And casting all the others by July to November. This is an amazing show. I think we get a good amount of the exposition and the basis of the world that we're living in. And it's full of jump scares and thrills and everything we've come to love with the Alien franchise and so much more. So I can't wait to dive deep and dive into it. Remember, it's about the face-hugging aliens that suck your face. They look like ticks and spiders. Them Australian spiders, bigger than a clock, than a wall clock. It looked like that. But the belly breathes like a tick when it grows, and they hug your face, right? And they're basically doing grotesque things in your mouth. Ugh. And then you wake up like nothing happened, I don't know how you waking up like nothing happened. How do you not know that you was just violated that way? And then you get a bad tummy ache and surprise, you're a mommy. I've kept it the same. Xenomorphs look really the same. They have no eyes that we know of. They can see via heat sensory, infrared heat signatures. They smell fear like we know, like other animals and earthlings do. And their blood is acid. They have a double mouth thing, and they're smart, conniving. They have a societal structure, and there's so much more to learn. Nikita, this show, holy cow, this show. Go ahead. Tell me about the show.
Well, the Alien franchise, for those of you all that don't know, and thank you for that lead-in, Jewel, the Alien franchise began in 1979 with the first Alien. Some of you all are like before Jesus was born, probably some young folks watching this. So for you all, it's like the first time seeing it, but it was created by Dan O'Bannon and Ronald Shusett. And it's been in just so many different aspects of it, right? Films, prequels, spinoffs, web series, comics, and video games. It's the Xenomorph is iconic. Everyone knows about the Xenomorph. Look at that creature, big giant brain head. I mean, it's scary, right? You know, Sigourney Weaver, everybody was like, you know, made it popular. Every time it came on, it just, I believe, people like this because it's really scary. And it's gross, but it's super scary. The Xenomorph species is central to the narrative, which features deadly encounters between humans and extraterrestrial creatures across the future. So you have Alien in 1979, Aliens in 1986, Alien 3 in 1992, Alien Resurrection in 1997, Prometheus in 2012. There's some kind of, you know, people, not everybody liked Prometheus, but it was okay. Alien Covenant in 2017, Alien Romulus in 2024, and that's a standalone story between Alien and Aliens. It was interesting. Alien Earth, which is what we're talking about right now. And Alien Earth right now, man, let me tell you, it was it's brilliant. It is brilliant. It is a brilliant reimagining. Jewel?
Remember, we also have crossovers with Alien versus Predator and Alien versus Predator Requiem. That was fire. Okay.
Right. I was, exactly. Exactly. Yes?
Nah. Emojis are sticking. Go. You're doing fabulous. Fabulous.
Right. Yes. So like she said, in 2004, there was Alien versus Predator. And then there was a web series in 2019 called Alien Containment and Specimen. Then there's comics. Right. And I think there was also the video game. Not think there was Alien versus Predator. I thought that was really good. You know, the Alien versus Predator. Because I like Predator, and you can't have, I mean, you have both of the biggest monsters in this, you know, Alien franchise fighting each other. Both very good monsters. It's brilliant, just brilliant. I really liked how they did the Alien Earth, and I just was like, man, it's so cool. So I'm going to go ahead and give you the cast and break down a little bit of the plot. And then we're going to talk about the episode one, which is Neverland. So here's the cast. And the cast is really good. A lot of people I didn't know. I'm getting to know them. Of course, obviously, Timothy Oliphant, who's been in a lot of things. Deadwood, if you hadn't seen Deadwood. Sydney Chandler plays Wendy. Timothy Oliphant plays Kirsch. Oliphant plays Kirsch. Lily Newmark plays Nibs. That girl was tripping. Okay, Nibs was tripping. Okay, Alex Lothar plays Hermit. Alex Lothar is, you know, the brother. Samuel Blinken plays Boy Cavalier, the boy genius. He reminds me of Willy Wonka. I don't know, when I saw him, I was like, that's Willy Wonka. Okay, Richard Morjani plays Zoya Zaveri. Essie Davis plays Dame Sylvia. Arana James plays Curly. And I hope I'm pronouncing their names correct. Apologies if I'm not. Kit Young plays Toodles. Adie Edmondson plays Adam Ines. Sandra Yee Sinsen Deaver plays Yutani. Apologies, ma'am. Babui Sise plays Mauro. Jonathan Ajayi plays Smee. Adarsh Gurav plays Slightly. Karen Aldridge plays Chibuzo. DM Camille plays Siberian. Max Reinhardt plays Bronski. And Jamie Bisping plays Malachite. And Mo Bar-El plays Rashidi. So when I think about this cast, it's just, as Jewel said, very expansive, very diverse. And they just did a brilliant, brilliant job. This is a reimagining of the storyline of Alien. This actually, as Jewel said, this series is set 2 years before the Alien film, the original Alien film. So what we're seeing is 2 years before actual Alien, which I think is interesting. And a young woman, it follows a young woman and a group of soldiers who discover a dangerous xenomorph after the research vessel USCSS Maginot crash lands on Earth. And literally, what we're talking about here is humanity, race for immortality through cyborgs, synths, and hybrids, as well as the shady operation of the Weyland-Yutani Corporation. The main characters, Wendy and the Lost Boys, are hybrids whose life becomes intertwined with the looming xenomorph threat. I thought this was brilliant how they reimagined this story. And I want you to really think about this four corporations, right? And it says, oh, brilliant, brilliant. In the future, the race for immortality will come in three guises: cybernetically enhanced humans, cyborgs, artificially intelligent beings, and artificially intelligent beings, synths, and synthetic beings downloaded with human consciousness, hybrids. What's crazy is, if you've seen Alien and you're watching this, you kind of start thinking about, you know, oh man, so this is how the synths and the hybrids come into it. In the first Alien, you already know, you know, because you know about Ripley and you really get into the Alien storyline, which is just genius. So you're watching this from my perspective, of Jewel's perspective. We've seen the first Alien, but imagine for the folks who's never seen Alien watching this. This is some brilliant, scary-ish, okay? And when we first get into it with Neverland, the first episode, I was like, holy cow! Because at first I was like, oh, I don't know. Man, I was all in from the beginning all the way through the end. Jewel?
It was, yes. It's filled with scares, intrigue. For the fans, like Nikita said, okay, if you have been an Alien aficionado, fan, follower from the 1970s, as her and I have been, then you gotta love it. You gotta love it. It's a giant homage. We have facehuggers introduced from the beginning. We have synths. Remember, we talked about Bishop in the rewind, and we talked about other things. And like Nikita said, when Ripley, who was Sigourney Weaver, was out here being a bad booty lady. I don't want to say booty, but I, when she was, you know, kicking butt and taking names, chewing gum at the same time, she had a synthetic, okay, with her. And we learned Bishop was based on a human being later on in the franchise, right? And we get to see that here. We get to understand how we got to that point. So this puts us in a prequel of everything about this television series is the exposition for the shows we've already loved. Okay. Because now we know how they got there, because we kept asking the question. And although we know money, corporate greed, and all those things, we kept asking, why are you going back out there? You know these things exist. Why are you back out there? Why are you doing this? Why do you trust it? Why do you, you know, there's no mech suit. There's no hull of any space, anything engineering that's going to protect you from the acidly grotesque beings these things are. And then you wonder why. But now here is the why. Here is the all the deep seated gruesome details of why human beings are up there and they don't care. And they're exploring and they're, it's just an amazing, amazing exposition. So this movie takes place in 2120. Okay. So almost 100 years in the future. It's 2120 and five companies control the Earth and colonize the solar system, including the recently founded Prodigy Corporation. Okay. Five companies. And I thought everything in this show was also social commentary, which is why I love the fact that it's such a diverse cast, because what you usually see is well, pasty, beige, e-crew, off-white, eggshell, white, and a dab of caramel for good measure. And that's not what we saw. We saw all the colors of all the continents, of all the regions, of all the peoples in it. And I like that, because that's what the world looks like now. I believe it's what the world is going to look like later. What we're dealing with now in our real life is, you know, corporations trying to take over life. And so that's what we're experiencing in this show. And I love that too. So peep the social commentary, y'all, because it's pretty astute. It's pretty cool. So five companies own the Earth. They've split it up as if they were sent by the gods, and they have cut Earth like a piece of pie. Okay. And eventually you learn that companies own pieces of Earth, but then there's one that is allowed in the sky and beyond, and they're never allowed to touch the ground. Okay. The USCSS Meganaut Wayland Yacht Yutani deep space research vessel approaches Earth after 65-year expedition in space. And I love the art throughout the whole thing. If y'all are paying attention, most space travel in all of the art forms we've ever seen puts us in some sort of hypersleep and hibernation type of mode, because we cannot, our bodies yet are not able to sustain the length of time it would take to get from point A to point B, because believe it or not, and we're going to get nerdy here because we're Blurred's Word, obviously, or just nerds. All of our existence, believe it or not, is just empty space. Y'all didn't know that, but congratulations, now you do. From the smallest molecule in the space between the nucleus to the outer rim, our world and everything about it is filled with space. So to get from point A to point B of this research and what they're doing, from here to the moon is space, empty space. From here to the sun is space. From here to Mars, from here to Mercury, from here to all these other places in the world, Betelgeuse, it's all very far away, okay? It's space. And so in space, you have to sleep, because we do not live 65 plus years after being 75 years old, going through 73 years of training. You know, there's not enough time for our bodies yet to go from point A to point B. So all of that to say, if you pay attention to the hibernation chamber that they're all in, it looks like the shape of a facehugger. As they're waking up in the first few minutes of the first show, as they're waking up, it opens up and flares up. The legs flare up and everybody's body is there when it opens up like a flower. It looks like a face hugger. And in that one moment, I was like, oh, snap. Oh, they're getting deep with this, like really, really deep. So pay attention to all the little cool Easter eggs and all the little amazing things they put in there. So you have a crew, right? You have a whole crew and people are waking up and you already know there's a problem. The crew is multi-diverse and there's one gentleman who is, it seems to be the boss, right? And everybody seems to get along, but not get along. And the group of people on the ship, we already know they got one sociopath on the ship. And everybody knows he's a sociopath because they're talking, well, he's a sociopath. Did y'all stop him from doing the creepy? And you're like, what? And I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm going to like this show after that. But every episode from that becomes so much better. So if you're the kind of person that you're like, I don't know if I like this, give it not just the first episode, give it past the first episode, give it to the second. It's so worth your time. Okay. And we learn about space travel and we learn about what's happening on Earth. On Earth, a research facility, you see a terminally ill child named Marcy Hermit. And she's definitely going through some medical trials and tribulations, right? And she's talking to a few adults and they're trying to tell her that things don't have to be this way. And she's going to be so special. She's going to be the first and the first in this exposition of this longer story of how they're making the synthetic body for hybrids. She will be the first human being to turn into the synthetic version of the mind of a human being and the body of a synthetic, and she'll be the first hybrid. And in doing so, we get to see the story of this beautiful little girl understanding how big of an adventure this is. And she's not alone. There are multiple children there, and they're all children, and they're all suffering in some way. And towards the end of the episode, we see that they are successful. A malfunction in space, as all of this is happening at the same time, happens. Because remember, the facehuggers are in space, okay? And the boss is like, well, the mission is more important, and he's shutting everything down. We know the facehuggers are out there doing stuff. And this ship that's up there doing research starts careening and crashing towards Earth. All while we know the successful first endeavor of creating hybrids is happening, and Earth and space collide. And this is where we are in the first episode. We finally realize why we have synthetics, why humanity is this way. And we're going to find out what happens when space and space research and the arrogance of testing and holding creatures we've never heard of and seen and understood captive, just to slice them, dice them, and inspect them, happens when they land. And the arrogance of humanity thinking they can be God or play God by this rich individual transferring our brains into synthetics. And it just starts off in the most panicked of craziest of ways. Nikita, what did you think of Neverland?
Man, Neverland from the beginning to the end was a bomb. Okay. So first, just like Jewel said, you know, these two things are happening at once. I was very intrigued by taking the little kids and putting them in these sense bodies. And, you know, the convincing of these are little children, right? And they've all got terminal illnesses. So I'm like, the sacrifice for science. That's gross. But it's also maybe a moral thing, right? Because they don't ever get a chance to grow up, but they're growing up in these bodies that are already adult bodies. And you know, if someone sees them, they think you're an adult, but you're really a child. I think that might be kind of a moral dilemma. And telling them that they're human when and as Jill said, hybrid, but they're not really human, are they? They just have the subconscious of the human being. You know, Noah Hawley, I know that dude watched a lot of science fiction. He had to. I mean, he directed that episode. And in that episode, just like in the exposition, as Jewel always points out, you know, you're talking about this thing for immorality. I mean, I'm sorry, immortality, which might be immoral, but sorry. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, these kids, the little rich kid, the little rich guy, you know, he annoyed me from the beginning because he's so selfish. He's like, he's a genius. He's better than everyone else. That's the arrogance of money, isn't it? So, you know, he does this thing, this experiment, and he doesn't really see these kids as children. But what he does know is that that's the most, when you're a child, is when your brain is easier to manipulate, right? To grow and to retain information and push forward. And it was brilliant the way they convinced the children, like through him reading Peter Pan, right? So Wendy, you know, is the first person who is made kind of like in charge of the Lost Boys. I mean, it was a brilliant, you know, analysis and a way to kind of make them, they have a leader, right? Now, we don't have Peter Pan yet, but you have Wendy, the first girl who is, you know, changed into, and they give up their real names, by the way, changed into this synth. And I'm like, man, so these children actually are changing themselves as if your body dies and so do you. Later on, you'll find that that doesn't play out very well. All right. So Wendy turns around and she helps the rest of them. And she very quickly learns how to manipulate the computers. So while this is going on and they're in this situation becoming who they are, the spaceship is crashing. Now, let me tell you something. When they started showing all that science stuff and all those creatures, I'm like, why do we always go and get these monsters and bring them back? I was creeped out. The eyeball, the plant things, all this slimy stuff. And how come y'all ain't seeing them get out? Okay, like when the scientist, the young lady was putting in, so they show different sections, by the way, as these actions are happening, where everyone is at the time, where Mauro is, where the other scientists are, where the pervert is, you know. And when she's messing around with that container and the eyeball, and you're going to find out later, that eyeball plays a very important role. I ended up liking the eyeball, kind of, but I'm still kind of grossed out about the eyeball. At the end of the day, I don't want any, you know, that creature is an octopus with a bunch of eyeballs. It's very disturbing. Okay, but the central eyeball, okay, it just disturbs me, okay? So I'm just like, okay, Mr. Holly, bring us some real horror. You know what I mean? And the action starts right away. And you don't really know, as Jewel was saying, about Mauro. It's obvious he's in charge. He's a security guy. But there is a captain of the ship who, obviously, the security guy overall, if something happens, takes charge. Well, the ship crashes. And right away, you see him meeting his prime directive, which is to save the creatures, the specimens. So right away, the xenomorph gets out, all kind of heck is breaking loose. You know, they send the army in to come in there. We don't know, but the boy genius is very, very, very interested in what's going on that ship. We don't realize at the time, now we know he's arrogant. We know he's kind of pumped. We don't really know why is he so caught up in it? Because we don't really understand the whole story of the corporations yet. That too would be revealed to us. I'm telling you, every time that xenomorph popped out of somewhere, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. It was excellent. I mean, just absolutely scared. All the way through. I love movies like that. And the fact that this is a TV series, I can't wait for the next season. But from the first episode of Neverland, which lets us know, you know, the girl, she wants her brother. See, they have their memories and their emotions. And she knows her brother is out there. And, you know, she's, you know, infiltrated the system. She's already outgrowing everyone else. She is actually a genius. The boy genius only thinks he is in his mind. When you make, you know, computers and AI, and they're going to outgrow you. Whether no matter what you do as a human being, you stop at a certain point. machines will continue. I believe that is also the danger of AI. Once they start communicating with each other, which, by the way, they are. So we watch this and we realize, oh man, it's getting ready to get deep. Her brother, Hermit, played by Alex Lawther, and Sydney Chandler plays Wendy, by the way. Shout out to her, because, man, she did that. She convinced me. I think you are a good actor or actress when you can play in an animate creature and not break character, not once. Kersh, Timothy Oliphant, brilliant job. Sydney Chandler. Those other kids, they were adults, like grown people in real life playing children. I'm telling you, everybody needs a shout out and a clap for this series. Now we're going to go ahead and go on to the next episode, because I'm telling you, you need to watch it. You need to watch it. You need to talk about it. You need to say, we want to make sure that this gets renewed. Make sure you let them know that you like it. And the way you do that is you watch it, because that's, you know, the most people watching it, that's how they make money. And hopefully they stay on the good side of things and we get a renewal on this. And if not on the channel that it's on now, somewhere new, someone else picks it up. Because in episode 2, which is Mr. October, this is when things really start going bananas. Tensions rise between rival corporations. Remember, we have the crash now, and someone's trying to decide, is it ours? Is it yours? Whatever. The boy genius, he has another plan. He's a scumbag for real, though. A reunion takes place and a secret is revealed. Noah Hawley, once again, wrote this, and this is directed by Dana Gonzalez. Jewel?
Wow. Yeah. Mr. October, you're absolutely right. We leave off where Wendy tells Kersh she wants to save her brother Joe, because her name is actually Marcy Hermit, Joe Hermit from death. And Kersh realizes, because Kersh is a full-on synthetic, Marcy is the first hybrid, who now takes on the name Wendy. Kersh says, with his facial expressions, I agree with Nikita 100%. Well, if you're supposed to be a feelingless individual, a cyborg or an android or, you know, like a Vulcan or a bishop or a Kersh, and you're not supposed to feel anything, you're just supposed to think and calculate. How do you make the rest of humanity watching this feel? Because usually acting is about making people feel. And so we have to, we watch and we want to empathize, sympathize, or be, you know, rejecting of whatever it is you're doing, which also makes us feel in some way. Mr. Oliphant did that in a way that I say, kudos to the man. I don't know what training camp you went to. I don't know what you did and how you did it. But through those inexpressive expressions, I felt you going, huh, well, isn't that interesting? And now I need to calculate what we're going to do with this. And you didn't say any of that, but I got that. Like, those are the words I heard in my brain. And all you did was like tilt your head sideways and there was no feeling, but I felt it all. Like, it was all feeling. So that was amazing. And watching them interact, we know that the synths have more feeling than humanity gives them credit for, because they are AI and they're supposed to be, but they're also, we would assume that there are directives given the time. They're not really said, it's never mentioned, but there must be directives where they must follow directions and do what needs to be done. We're not exactly sure whether those rules apply. Usually there's the rule of, before you make an AI or robot, it must first agree to never do harm, and then it must do all these things. And it's like a tertiary set of rules. We don't think that that's the case here, because eventually there's a lot of combative action that happens, and them synth be doing a lot of things to human beings. So I don't know. Okay, So we leave off with the premise of what Nikita said. This gentleman, Mr. Cavalier, thinks he's very, very smart and the smartest person in the room. Well, kudos to her picking that up, because the premise of Mr. October is we hear a discussion between Dame Sylvia and Boy Cavalier that he did something special with Wendy as the first, the mother of the lost boys. And that was added a complete extra turn of artificial intelligence because he wanted someone as smart as him or smarter than him in the room because he was bored with other individuals and conversation. So as Nikita's already said, she has learned in ways that we have not seen anyone else learn. She can manipulate via Wi-Fi or whatever, all the security cameras, all of the everything. She has learned beyond the capacity of what we think this child, remember she's a child, is supposed to be able to do. Okay. The ship has landed and it is on the ground touching earth, terra firma. Mr. Rich Kid says, first come, first serve, losers, keepers, no, finders, keepers, losers, weepers. And he's going to investigate what's on the ship. The owner of the ship says, that's mine. And he's like, I think not, because you entered our space. You landed on the ground. You're only allowed in the air and space. So now it's mine. And she's like, All of this is happening while Mr. Morrow, the security guard, agent, warrior, extraordinaire, amazing dude, locked himself in and knew that this was going to happen and is being told, he's given instructions, and he tells the ship, which interestingly, he's talking back and forth through the comms, and he says, I've got to tell mother or this is going to happen. And he's conversing with a person, individual, or a computer called mother. And I always found that great because remember I told you that the pods that they're hibernating in looks like a face hugger. And then in the rewind, I said that if you looked at all the consoles and the computers, it looked like a Commodore 64. It looked like the green blinking editor screen from the 1970s and 80s that we all, if y'all remember, it looks like a homage to the old films and the old methodologies of how we knew technology was going to be. And it was just like a big embrace. Mother was the name of the xenomorph that interacted with Ripley. And then Ripley became Mother later, if you remember the franchises. So I always thought that was amazing. I really love the way that was done. So we have... a sword fighting, a metaphorical sword fighting, y'all could call it something different, between one head of a company and another head of a company who's going to have dibs on the intellectual property that's in this ship that's crashed. Because now that it's touching Earth, it belongs to this person because it's in his yard. But the lady's like, that's my ship. You can't have it. And Morrow is going to go find the stuff. And what is the stuff that we're talking about? You got it. The face huggers, the aliens. That's all he's supposed to get. Okay. All right. So the xenomorph tracks Joe because Joe is on the premises because he is a medical doctor for war reconnaissance and other things working for the company. He has been working through the company as, you know, a medic. Okay. And since it hit the earth and it crashed through various different buildings, they're going to need a medic. Wendy says, you better keep him safe. And Boy Genius is like, okay, cool. Yeah. We'll keep him safe. And that's an interesting little turn of events because he was tired. He was sad. He has no more family. And he was actually trying to quit the day that this happened, the moment that this happened. And that's when we learn Wendy has these extra powers because she's looking through the security footage and she hears his voice and she sees him go to the, you know, the teller, the agent guy at HR. And he's like, I quit. And he's like, yeah, but you can't. And the dude is like, what? I did my time. I did what I was supposed to do. I did as many tours as I was supposed to. I don't need to be here anymore. He's like, yeah, well, you can't. And everything that stops him from being able to leave the company is Wendy manipulating the data, denying his relief of being able to leave and be autonomous. And she says, you better keep him alive. Kirsch goes, other people go. Joe, her brother, goes to check to find who's alive, what they find, whether they can save any bodies and bring back to the company. And Wendy says, we're going with you. And Kirsch says, are you out of your AI mind? And she's like, we can do it. We can't die. And Boy Cavalier is intrigued and says, sure, because he doesn't know what's happening. And he says, and by the way, I don't want to lose manpower. She's right. Take them and let's see what they can do. And Kirsch tries to say, but they're children. They're children. And he says, but they're not. But they're not. So while Joe is being chased by a xenomorph and Morrow is trying to save people from the xenomorph and retrieve the alien because it's property of Mother or whomever this person is that owns the company, we also see the hybrids Tootle, Smee, Nibs, and Curly encounter various different beings and things, including a plant that's hanging from the sky. And Kirsch says, huh, again, it's not reacting to us, so let's bag tag and bring it back. And he sees the other specimens bag tag and bring them back. And we have an altercation between Nibs and Mrs. Eyeball. And I just want to say that the eyeball creature, just like Nikita, and I'm about to hand it back to her. For me, the eyeball creature is pretty fantastic, and it screams Stephanie Meyer's The Host. If you've read the book, The Host, not watching a movie, I mean, I did, but if you've read the book, The Host, and I think that's so interesting because I love how art sometimes overlaps and reminds you of other things because we just share the same planet and we're just thinking these cool things. Stephanie Meyer's The Host is this ancient, old alien race, alien to us, but very, very old, like thousands upon thousands of millennia old. And they're a symbiotic creature that is very, very tiny, but supposedly the size of a spider, but it has ganglia and proboscises, I don't know, just like tendrils, I don't know, squiggly things. And it connects to your spine and it uses your spinal cord to see through your eyes and talk and basically share your brain and eventually smothers the original individual and just lives in this new body. And for ages upon ages, it flew through space, attaching itself to different species. This eyeball reminded me of that. I was like, oh, snap. But instead of connecting to the back of your brain stem, where your spinal cord connects to the brainstem, this is quite literally going into your eyeball, pulling it out because what your eyes are directly, your brainstem is connected to your eyeballs, guys, right? So it pulls it out and then goes right back in there and then looks like an eyeball and it's ambulating and moving like you. And I thought, immediately I thought, how old is this creature? How much does it know? We know that it's smart because in episode one, it was trying to tell the black lady, bruh, the face hugger don't got loose. You gonna die. And she didn't listen. She didn't care. In fact, she like scolded it or some stuff. Like, I'm not gonna talk to you. And I'm like, listen to the eyeball. It knows what it's saying. So that was interesting. And I thought that was so cool. I can't wait to hear what Nikita thinks about Mr. October. We see so much death in this one. This one was gruesome, grisly. But we also learn that Morrow has a weapon against the synths. I mean, no, against the xenomorphs. And we learn that he's a hybrid here. He's a cyborg. He's got an arm. And he tries to tell human beings, don't be scared, don't be scared. They can smell it. And we know that he's a human being because he's sweating. He's sweating. And he uses electricity to try and keep the xenomorph. And then, well, you know, people just, I don't know. Nikita?
You're so right. You're so right. Thank you. Thank you for all of that. And you're right. Stephanie Meyer's the host. When we discussed it before, I was like, yeah. I don't like that eyeball, but I like the eyeball. It's very disturbing how I feel about this eyeball. But the host was, I don't want to digress, but yes, you're absolutely right. So in this Mr. October going into Metamorphosis, the brother and, Wendy get together. All right, then the brother gets hurt. Let me tell you something. That xenomorph was wrecking that building, tearing these people apart. And I was just like, "Oh my God, you all are so stupid! Why are you opening the door? Why are you staying? Why aren't you leaving? Why aren't you running? Look, I'm black, baby. I'm out. I'm out. Somebody tell me to leave. I'm leaving. Period." You know? And I was like, "This is just crazy." And Mara, he played his role so well. He has a job to do. He is going to do his job. I think people, a lot of people thought he might have been a synth, but he sweat. Jewel pointed that out. Very important. Loyalty to his company, mission accomplishment is his whole purpose is to accomplish the mission, which is to bring back the eggs. And the monsters and all the little science experiments that they went out there to go and get, which is just so disturbing to me. Every time I think about what rich people do and how they don't care about humanity. And he is a part of humanity, by the way. But he used the electricity, knocked the xenomorph out. Wendy can actually fight the xenomorphs, and her brother gets hurt really badly. And so, they end up bringing the creatures back to the ship. The two actors that played the young boys, I just thought they did such a brilliant job. I was so impressed that I was like, man, I'm very convinced that these are kids. I'm very convinced that these are kids. Even though these are grown men, okay, playing these characters, it was genius. And I was just like, you kids need to leave them eggs alone. Y'all need to stop messing around. See, that's the thing. That's what Kirsch knew. Kids, you have to stop them from being messy and nosy and touching stuff they ain't supposed to be touching. How many times you tell your kids, don't put your hand in that light socket, and they stick their hand in the stupid light socket? Oh, shot! Or licking the battery, something crazy like that. And they don't even realize they should be afraid. And these actors, I'm telling you, absolutely brilliant. When we're talking about the characters of the two kids that were down there with Kirsch, well, actually, Wendy was down there with Kirsch, all the kids were. Nibs was down there with Kirsch, these two kids, Smee and Slightly, they were very frustrating. Because I'm like, you all better stop being, pay attention, pay attention. Okay, because I'm like feeling, I'm looking at adults, but I'm really like, they're kids, they're acting, they're doing kid things so well. And they even say, ew, gross, at the right time. Everything is very childlike, right? But I already had a bad feeling about Nibs. Okay, when Nibs got her face attacked and she was like having all kind of, I'm like, oh, she's not gonna be a normal synth creature. She's a little bit touched. Okay, through it, right?
Not touched.
Yeah, I thought she was a little bit touched, man. I'm like, oh, she got problems. And I don't think therapy is going to help that. But Kirsch paid close attention, And look, the xenomorph kills humans, So it's not really going to go. The cyborgs don't have fear. And since literally Morrow is trying to explain fear is the weapon. And I don't think people were really paying attention. I mean, fear is an emotion. It's got a smell. Animals can feel that and smell that and they're moved towards it. When a cat chases you when you're afraid, because it's a scent. It's an unusual scent, and it goes after. It's not really trying to terrorize you. It's trying to say, "Oh, what is this? What is wrong with you? How come you don't love me?" I'm saying, I don't think the xenomorphs are saying that though. Okay, they're predator aliens. Desire. Killing everything. Okay, so they end up going back in episode three of Metamorphosis. They return home with unexpected cargo, the eggs. They return home with the eggs. And an unsettling experiment occurs. occurs and a new talent is discovered. Noah Hawley, you are a twisted, twisted fella. Okay. So, you know, when they come back with the eggs and things, and her brother, because he's hurt, we come into it and a lot is going on. That unsettling experiment, that's the eyeball, bruh. That's the eyeball. Jewel?
Yeah. So like you said, the disturbing part what I was getting with about the whole old creature, we know this eyeball is smart, but Nibs being the touched one, I can't believe you said that. Being the disturbed one, the eyeball is confused because the eyeball thinks they're human, right? And the eyeball wants to get into an eyeball space, you know. The eyeball first tried to get into the xenomorph and could not because there's no eyes on the xenomorph. And it was like, oh, so that was also kind of terrifying because the eyeball learned that it cannot use that creature for symbiosis. And I say symbiosis, but let me be clear. When you rip out your eyeball like that, it looks like it's dead. And it acts dead because it's killing the being. Anyway, so we're on metamorphosis. Nib questions Curly about the hybrids and why are they all named after Peter Pan characters? And I'm gonna say, good job, Nibs. You ain't as goofball as I thought you was because you look a little disturbed. And why Marcy gets to be Wendy? So we already know Nibs is problematic. Messing with the eyeball nearly got her. She's jealous. She wants to know. And I want to say that they're not all named after the Lost Boys. They're called the Lost Boys, but Smee was Captain Hook's right-hand man. And Curly is the name of one of the pirates. And I want to say that Mr. Cavalier is no Peter Pan. I just need y'all to know. If you're willing to do this stuff and you don't care about life, limb, and the health and wellness of children and everyone else, and you're so arrogant, to me, you're a James James Hook, okay? You're Captain Hook. That's what you are. And you're not a good guy. That was a Freudian slip. I feel the same. But okay. So Nibs is kind of, we're crossing all sorts of sci-fi today. I'm just a mumbler today. Okay. So Cavalier orders the specimens to be brought to Neverland Island to, you know, cut, slice, dice, and check them out. They find the xenomorph eggs. He wants to know what's going on. Kirsch confronts Morrow, the cyborg, the gentleman who is entrusted to bring everything back. And he's like, you're on our soil right now. Get off the premises or it'll be so much worse. And in this interaction, he implants a device on Slightly's neck before he is able to escape. And Slightly is the young Desi gentleman who's not a gentleman at all. Remember, they're all kids. They're all children. One of the Lost Boys. Wendy and Joe fight the xenomorph with a meat hook. Wendy kills the xenomorph, although they both have injuries, some more serious than others. They go back to the island and Joe undergoes big giant surgery and eventually he gets a cybernetic lung. And now he cannot leave for real. He finds out who Wendy is. He's distraught about it. He can't believe it because he was told his sister died. His sister explains, no, it really, really is me. I didn't want you to know. Dad didn't want you to know. What would you have thought and what would you have felt had you known that Dad had just given me to this research in hopes that I would live? And if it didn't work, then what? We know that everyone's confused at the moment. The kids are feeling super heroic because they realize that there's creepy stuff going on, but they can't be hurt. And like Nikita said, they just touching everything. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't go licking the walls. It's so gross. And they're experiencing the world in a new way. Joe is now tethered to this company forever, because not only do they have his sister, but he was given a lung. And he's like, well, I don't know. I don't know how this goes. And Wendy wakes up and can hear nothing. And as they try and fix her from the damage that she got from the xenomorph, she's like, y'all don't hear that? And they're like, hear what? You really don't hear that? He's like, hear what? She can hear the sonic vibrations and the conversations, because they sound like conversations to her, between all the xenomorphs and the eggs before they're even out of the eggs. She can hear and communicate with them. And we are left right there with Metamorphosis. It's going from, wow, that's gross, to creepy, to holy cow, could you have possibly gotten even more creepier than that? Nikita, what?
Yeah, first of all, you bring all these monsters into your crib, into the house, okay? Then you, like, eggs. You ain't got no business bringing them eggs there. You're not going to eat those eggs. I mean, why are you bringing those eggs there? Don't you see these eggs? They're problematic, okay? That's one thing. I'm kidding. And then you see the sheep, and you know something bad's going to happen to the sheep. And I'm telling you, I got unnerved. I thought he killed the sheep. I was beside myself. I'm like, the eyeball that killed the sheep! And then they get up. And I'm like, oh no, Mr. Bill, the eyeball got up and inside the sheep. So I was pretty much like, wow, you are twisted, bruh. Okay. But it was good. Now we have a sheep that's the star. The eyeball itself is a star. The eyeball is watching everyone, looking at everything, you know, and the boy genius, he kind of figured that out, right? Because he's a monster himself. Let's see what this can do, and let's see what that can do. Weirdo face head. So, you know, I was worried when they took the lung that they were going to put the eyeball into the brother. I was stressed out about that. I don't know if the brother is Peter Pan, because, you know, Peter Pan never grew up. The brother is very mature. And every analogy that Jewel has said really absolutely makes sense to me. You know, you got the followers, you got the leaders, right? But very close to Curse. While you're watching this, after you listen to it, I guess, go back maybe. Pay very close attention to Kirsch. Remember, Kirsch, he thinks human beings are idiots. And he feels very strongly that he is, well, obviously better than them. As every AI movie you've ever seen, every cyborg movie you've ever seen, humanity is beneath that of the computer. And this is even more relevant. And he, you know, he's like, man, I got to take these children with me. And the fact that this so-called genius is not aware of the harm that kids can cause, they are not like me, but they will be like me. And that arrogance also on him, right? Because remember, computers, you program computers to think how you want them to think. So this is what you're seeing, is how he looks at the human beings now, because he's continued to learn. And you see him. You see him watching. You see him learning. You see him figuring out how the aliens work. Like he tells Mr. Boy Genius, and I'm going to call him that because it's sarcastic. He is far from a genius. That's the thing about smart people. You know, really intelligent people don't have to tell you they're smart. Really intelligent people don't have to continuously emphasize their genius and their everything over anyone else. Not once does Wendy or any of these other little beings say how smart they are. They're showing us how smart they are. Heck, the eyeball can't even speak, baby. And the eyeball is smarter than everyone in the room, okay? Because the eyeball's like, y'all are banana cakes. Y'all done brought the xenomorph out here. We got history, okay? So this episode, I think, was the penultimate episode. I think a lot of people, it's not though, but it's the one that brings you all into it to go, oh my God, this, the plan is going to be to use these creatures, to take these creatures and really, you know, get rid of humanity, and to use the xenomorphs to make more and see if they can control them. What they don't realize is that one person can control them. One person has a connection with them. And we see at the end of this episode, her pass out because she can hear the screaming of the eggs. They're screaming. So gross. It's so gross because those eggs go in people's bodies. When the thing jumps out and you know, if you remember Alien, when the eggs break out of the human being, I tell you, it's the thing that makes me afraid of spiders. Anybody else that might jump into me and come out to see please watch Alien. You all will definitely understand where we're coming from. I think if I have one sadness, is that Sigourney Weaver is not in this. But she, you know, later on, we'll, you know, she has, well, she actually did an interview, and I'm glad she did. But I'm sad that she's not in this, because all of my, you know, Alien love is Sigourney Weaver. You know what I mean? And Mother. It's so interesting how that keeps coming up. And I just, oh man, I was like, if there could have been a way to fit her in, like she's the great grandmother of the person before or whatever. And so we're going to hit the final episode in this episode of Blur's Words, Alien Earth, episode 4, Observation. An unexpected connection is formed while, and let me tell you what, this episode is a really good episode. This is a really, really good episode. Listen, all of these episodes are good. Very rarely will you hear me say that every single episode is fire. Every single episode is fire, I promise you. While a covert plot puts everyone in danger, this is written by Noah Hawley. Clap, 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 Mr. Hawley, writing and directing this reimagining or this premise of prequel to Alien. I think, you know, when you have these thoughts and these ideas for to make the magic, to make it work and implement it in the way that you did is beautiful. Jewel?
Thank you. Thank you so much. You're absolutely right. It gives exactly what we have come to love and enjoy from the Alien franchises. Kudos to you, sir, because the people you have put in place and whatever's flowing around in your imagination, bruh, it screams homage. It screams, this is exactly where the franchise should be, where it needs to be, and bringing it into our technological future, but not ignoring all the things we loved about the 70s and 80s. And yeah, we need to bring Ripley in here somehow, or her great, 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 great grandmother or whatever, because Sigourney Weaver is Mother. Come on. We got to do that. And if we could bring Bishop in there too, you know, to like high five and say, congrats, Kirsch, you know, you're doing great or whatever. And I know that's going to be kind of weird, but it would be great to see that work, you know? And I can't wait for a few game over, man, game overs to be thrown in there. For good measure. Anyway, so we're at Wendy's waking up. She's collapsed. She can hear the screaming of the eggs. And we know now that she can communicate with these individuals. And Kirsch and Tootle test the octopus-like creature, the Trypanohancha oscillus. I did not say that right, but that's okay, because why I need to know eyeball creature name? For we're not friends like that. And I don't want I'm not inviting her over for dinner. We don't go together like that. I can appreciate her from afar. I enjoy my eyeballs. Thank you very much. She's in a sheep, and Tootle renames himself Isaac, after Isaac Newton, and Kumi and Maro are in converse. Kumi and Maro pressures slightly into revealing his real name, Arush Singh, and he's from India. And as a sign of trust, he wants him to bring him something, the xenomorph egg. Now, remember, they're children, and children are easily swayed to do things they're not supposed to. What we don't know is Maro is going to make sure he's going to get the property back. Nibs is bat guano crazy. If you don't know what guano is, it's scat, is dookie, is poo-poo, is poop, it's all the stuff. She is bat guano crazy. Okay. She is wackadoo. She is off the wall. She is absolutely triggered, harmed, and disheveled from the eyeball interaction. And now she's claiming she's pregnant. Yes. Yes, child, she's pregnant. How? Why? In what way? Like, does that make any sense? Miss Dame Sylvia is like, say what now? And she's a psychiatrist slash helper. and she's supposed to be helping. And she's like, oh, honey, baby, no, you're not. And Nibs looks at her and immediately, I'm going to snap my fingers. I don't know how it sounds. So she goes from, yes, I am. I am pregnant and I'm going to love him and hug him and call him George. And then immediately when the lady says, no, baby, you're not. Like, that's not possible. She goes, yes, I am. And wants to kill her. Like, she turns into robotic, synthetic, weird, psycho, socio killer with scissors. And I mean, since I've already brought in all the other shows, why not? Psycho, with, like, she really wants to just hurt this lady. And remember, these are synthetic bodies. So since these are synthetic bodies, right, she's got the strength of Hulk on roids. So relying on her psychiatric expertise, she calms down and she's like, okay, yeah. No. Yeah. We're chill. It's cool. We're good. And she realizes this young lady is that guano crazy. She thinks she's, you know, she thinks she's pregnant and she needs to tell the dude. I'm noticing, I'm noticing latent maniacal tendencies in Nibs. Maybe we should be concerned. And the dude is like, nah, we good. And I wish there were like other bodies around me, because if y'all would have seen my face, I would have been like, huh, are y'all, you seeing this? Cause I've seen it. You seen this? Nikita, you seen this? Cause I was seeing this. And I was like, what? Did he not understand that this cyborg lady woman child thing is claiming she is gestational? Like, she got a baby growing. There is something. The synapses are not synapsing. They're not snapping. They're not, I don't know. Morrow makes a deal and says, I need this egg. And Slightly is so innocently devoid of critical thinking, because remember, they're all children. He's like, yeah, bruh, I can help you out. He's like, yeah, you can help me. And we see at the end that, as Nikita said, Kirsch is above all the human shenanigans, just above it all. He has been listening. He is connected to all of this, the new hybrids, and he has heard the conversation between Morrow and Arush Singh, and we know that he's also in India with his family. And so we know that children are do anything to take care of their family. There is no such thing as being someone new when we're kids into this body, and we're put into one of the most difficult scenarios here. I agree with Nikita from the first episode. We're talking morality, right? We are talking morality. We have a synth who is AI programmed, who believes he's above humanity, and humanity is just disgusting and weird. That's Kirsch. And we have this cyborg, Amaro, who is this gentleman who is threatening this young kid and his family to do something that he needs to do. And this kid's life was saved by this company, right? Because all of the children were on death's door. All of the children were dying. All of the children were not going to live past a certain point. And so there's this conflict of interest, because he loves his mom and his siblings, and he's going to do what any kid is going to do. And this is where we're left off. We're left off in Wendy can talk to the xenomorphs, and the brother has a new lung. Cavalier is cavalier, quite literally. Please look up that word. He is that disrespectful. Nibs has gone absolutely Arkham Asylum crazy. And wow, I can't wait for the next episode of NJ Chat. Nikita, what was this? What was this episode?
Man, look, these kids, man, they're problematic, okay? But you know, I think it was so smart the way that they did it. Thank you. Everything that you said, let me Nibs this banana cakes. You hear me? When she jumped on that therapist like some kind of jumping spider, I was like, oh, snap! She killed the doctor. You know, I mean, I was like, at first I was like, well, I thought that the creatures can't do anything with with these cyborg, not human being sense things. Then I realized, oh no, homegirl is really crazy. Okay, so I'm waking up thinking she's pregnant. What is happening here? You know? And then I'm like watching the boys slightly, you know, I was very disappointed in slightly. All right. Once Mauro realized that it was a child, he manipulated him like you manipulate a child. You know what I'm saying? And that was so tragic, because what we also see is the beginning of now slightly doing or thinking immoral, all right? Immorally, whose life is worth more, you know? He doesn't care that that's his friend's brother. He doesn't care that these are the doctors that saved his life, that made him, well, sort of saved his life, right? Put his emotion or subconscious into the body of this adult male. What he cares about is his family, who he's thinking about. And that's all that matters. Some would say that's not immoral. I would do whatever for my family. For me, it's like, that's your friend's brother, bruh. Then they start doing what kids do, right? Pointing fingers. That's brilliantly played by these actors. I tell you, if you are watching this and aren't thinking, These are grown people. They play children so well. And if you've got kids, you know, if you've been around kids, the annoyance, the you know, insecurity of children, the jealousy, the pettiness. Kids are petty, baby. They are petty. Okay. You know, and even sometimes the outrageous imagination in mind. I think Nibs was so traumatized by her cancer. And Jewel and I discussed this, and Jewel is the one that actually said this to me, you know, the cancer and everything. Look, the pain, as an adult, it's terrible, but imagine being a child going through that. You don't know what death is, but you sure learn what pain is, okay? And her being afraid that that could happen again. She literally thought she had feelings. That's why she thought Eyeball had hurt her. She's not a human. She couldn't feel, you know, but her mind remembered what pain felt like. And so she thought that she was literally being damaged by that creature. We watch her losing her ish, really. And again, Kirsch watching all of this, tapped into all of it. And Mauro hatching the plan to get the eggs, knowing that a child loves its mom and dad more than anything in the world, because that's who brought them in. Most children do. And using the family against the boy. That's terrible. And what he does to me is like, wow, you don't even realize just the choice that you're making. I mean, you're thinking, looking to see who you can push in there into the egg room, man, with those creatures. Okay. You know, the storyline and how it moves is very, very brilliantly displayed. Even from the music being played. Even from the motions, you can hear in your head, you know, as they open the door into the lab, as the eggs start doing that weird breathing, opening, creepy thing that it does, you know, it makes me move away from, like, maybe it's going to get me, you know, when it latches onto you, when it, you know, wraps around your neck. These little itty bitty nuances in the directing really, really have. The eyeball looking around the room, the eyeball actually learning and watching what happens, in that these are not human beings, as Jewel said, but they can be destroyed. Okay. And you see them all melty face and everything. We know that from watching, you know, Alien, the first Alien. We're like, whoa, 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 whoa. They're all melty facing. So, you know, you're like, I don't know how this sounds, but hopefully you get my drift, you know? So you're watching this and you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, what's the next? I can't wait till we do the next four episodes, because this is excellent. And I think one thing you need to really pay attention to the evolution of Wendy. She, I will tell you, I was scared of that little girl. And she's going to have to make a choice about her own brother. Her human brother, you know, and where they fit in the gene pool, so to speak, or in the hierarchy. And then we also see the corporation and what they want and Mauro, and more of that will be in the next few episodes, how Mauro fits in. We get to see the backstory and what really happened on the ship and before it crashed. And man, just up to this point, I'm just like, man, this is every episode made me go, what can they do better than this last episode? Ah, come on. No, every single episode was done very, very well. And I will tell you, you actually literally kind of see them growing into adults throughout all of this. And I don't know that people actually realize that they're actually learning that human beings can't be trusted. Human beings lie. They learn to lie. Tell me that's not something. Kirsch, he doesn't lie. He just doesn't say anything, which some people would say omission is a lie. He's just like, I hope they kill all of you. I hope the aliens eat you all up. Okay. Literally, even how he talks to the brother, and he's like, we own you. We gave you that lung. We own you. That's the property. As simple as that. He semi-respects Mara, I think. But clap, clap, clap to all of them. They did a really good job. I'm going to tell you, though, one of the children, Jonathan Ajayi, who plays Smee, you know, he loves his family. He loves his brothers and sisters. And he kind of, you know, when slightly explains what's going on, we're going to see this in the next one, obviously. I like how every time they explain something to him, he's like, okay, sure, let's go do this. Let's go do that. You know, and I'm like, bruh. Okay, do you know what he's telling you? So he died? Oh, wow. That's terrible. Let's go play. You know, that's the kind of stuff that they're like doing. And you're like, oh my God. So good. And I'm literally like thinking to myself, slightly, you better cut it out. You're going to get everybody killed. It's genius. It's genius. But what you will do is see that there's kind of between the women, the girls, there's going to be a kind of push on the leadership role. But Wendy is the leader. Whether you all know it or not, Wendy is the leader and she is going to guide them. Wendy can talk to the monsters, that little baby monsters, and talking to the grown-up monsters, talking to the monsters, okay? And you know, once that happened, the tide has turned. Oh my gosh, it's so, so good. So this was all four episodes, and I will tell you, you know, we're lining you up for what's coming in the next four episodes. But I want to give, you know, kind of a shout out a little bit to the music. It's not really my thing, but I think it fit the plot. I think there are some people who are like, oh, well, yeah, music. Well, it was crazy. It was rock and roll. It was hard rock. And it fit. Like, you know, banging. This is good. And I know a lot of people liked it. And we talk about the score a lot. And I think the thought for the score actually was thoughtful. And it kind of works. I am not someone that likes hard rock. I am not someone that would normally listen to it. And I kept saying, that's devil me of that. But when I thought about it, I'm like, oh, wow. You know, that actually works with it. You know, and I am someone that loves every genre of music. There are some people that don't like, I don't particularly listen to jazz, classical, you know, R&B, soul, soft rock, you know, and I realized that it really fit the frenetic energy of the show. And it really fit the like fast paced, dangerous movement that was going on. Jewel, what did you think?
Interesting. I thought interesting. I will say this. Shout out to the people who did the work, because what it did for me, again, Neverland episode 1, Mr. October episode 2, Metamorphosis episode 3, and Observation episode 4. And I just wanted to correct the way I said Maginot. Maginot is the name of the ship, not Maginot. Okay. It's French. The soundtrack to me was very reminiscent of 1979, 1980, 81, 82, 83. The hard rock, I guess now people would call it classic rock, but heavy, heavy rock. And I think if I were to put it in like a bunch of babushka dolls, this is a very world-renowned franchise. So that's the big doll, right? We're watching a show that everybody's very familiar with. And then it sits in a particular place in time, right? So Alien for me screams late 70s, early 80s. It screams that for me. You know, my past. And but then everything around it was happening too. So for me, the soundtrack seems to fit with an homage to that. Is it my cup of tea? No. No. Absolutely not. I'm sorry. I wasn't headbanging to any of these hard tracks. And not to say that I wasn't familiar with them or the songs that were being played. It's just that, you know, what's for me is for me. What's not is not. And that's cool. Did it hit right? I think if we're tipping our hat to the time, I'm going to say it went well. But what I didn't do that I do for other shows was linger longer to hear the rest of the song. Let me just put it that way. You know how, you know, you got the credits going, you wait to see if they got an end credit scene and you listening, you jamming, you're like, wow, that's pretty dope. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I didn't do that for this. I did the whole stick to the slide and slid the the streaming down to see, do we have an end credit scene? No, we don't. Okay, cool. And turned it off. So I thought it fit well. I thought it went well with it. Because like it or not, this is a slasher horror, very gory type of franchise. And so I guess if you're a heavy metal headbanger, it fits well. I don't think they did it wrong. It's just not something I'm going to cop. I'm not going to go and buy the soundtrack. But that's okay, because it's not a complaint. It's just not going to be on my repertoire. Nikita, I hope that makes sense.
Perfect, perfect. And we always talk about the score. And let's be clear, there were some songs that were cool, but that ending every single time just had me going, yeah, I'm what I am. And I'm not bad. But a lot of people are. So let me go ahead and give props, as we always do, because that's fair. It's important. I tell you, the score is important and it brings you into the mood. It did a good job. And I'm going to tell you what made it even more important. And I'm pretty sure Jewel agrees with this. You didn't focus on that, but it let you be nervous as crap when it let you at the right time. Certain songs were being played and you didn't even think about it so much so because it really drew you in. That's a sign of a good score. Sinners had the same issue, not issue, same thing, because that's what made Sinners brilliant. There are some movies where the score is, it doesn't fit. And you're like, wow, that this score actually fit. Jeff Russo is the composer for the score. And he said he actually has a video where he talks about his inspiration for it. You can check it out on the YouTubes. And I think he did a good job in bringing the emotion in. So let me tell you some of the songs that were on there. And I will tell you this, it wasn't all headbanger, okay? So you had Nina Simone at the very beginning in Neverland. You know, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, TV on the Radio, Killer Crane, Lord Afrizana. A lot of stuff if I don't pronounce it correct, I apologize. Probably not something I listen to. Okay. No Day Today, I think. Sin Sisamuth, Rosare Sothia, Mupina. Don't ping us. Okay. Because we're doing the best I can. Thank you for that correction on the name of the ship, the Imagino. Black Sabbath, grew up with Black Sabbath. So feel kind of like, okay, that they, you know, that was that crazy music at the end. Now, I don't listen to Black Sabbath. I didn't as a teenager either. But I'm glad that they are still, because they are classic hard rock, right? Or classic rock. The Mob Rules, that was in the end credits. At the end credits, you are this, I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. Okay, so, you know, anyone that can, if your mother tell you, turn that devil music off. Yeah, I wasn't listening to that at the time. I was listening to possibly some weed music, not sure. Accentuate the positives, that's interesting. Stinkfist, that was Tool, Stinkfist, and Metamorphosis, it was by Berg Bayaka. Metallica always shows up when you're talking about hard rock, classic rock, wherever I may roam. I'm glad to see that a lot of these rock classic heroes, you know, for those of you that like classic rock, which is funny that it's called classic rock, because back in my day, it was just hard rock. Wherever I may roam, Metallica's been around for a long time. Glad to see them getting some play, because that'll make kids go and look. I believe wherever you get your music, whatever music speaks to you, you know, as long as it doesn't make you a serial killer, that's all I'm saying. Sydney Chandler, accentuate the positive or eight the positive, I don't know. Jane's Addiction, I actually do like Jane's Addiction. Ocean Size in credits for episode 4 in observation. So the score is important for getting you into those emotions. You know, when they're running, when the eyeballs get ready to do something crazy, when they're murdering and slaughtering all these people, because I'm telling you, I am never, ever, ever going to forget there's a couple of scenes, but you'll hear that the next time, where when they go in that hotel and that guy's like, what are you talking about? And then Cedar Murphy just runs right through them. I'm like, I think he told you. So I think that the music fit perfectly. I think all in all, I think this is a brilliant show. I hope everyone watches it. We did episodes 1 through 4. And I am, thank you all, you know, if you're listening. And also, Pearl Jam is in this, but it's not for those of you that like Pearl Jam. I actually do. But it wasn't any of those. They'll probably be next week. So I think that it's worth watching if you haven't watched it. It's worth talking about, because when you talk about these shows that for some of us were like classics growing up, and you look at the reimagining, and this literally is a reimagining of what the prequel, what led to the actual Alien, because you often wonder, why did this happen? What's going on? How is this working? Man, humanity, I never would have thought, never would have thought that the idea that computers could take over the world. Well, you know, that might be a reality if we're not careful. You know, that when I first saw the, you know, synth, you know, robots talking, and I watch a lot of these movies, by the way, they have done it better than a lot of people previously. You know, and that, a lot of that has to do with how movies have evolved, how technology has evolved. Please use real actors. I do not want to see AI actors. I want to see real people doing real jobs, doing real acting. This is real acting by these actors, and clap, clap, clap to every last one of them for, you know, showing up and showing out. Jewel?
Agreed. Please, no AI actors. There's no such thing. That's just cinematography. And kudos to you if you could do that. That has nothing to do with acting. Thespians exist since the beginning of time, and it's an art form we do not want to lose. And I appreciate it every single time someone puts their entire soul into a part, and I am here to feel it all. And so thank you to all of you that do that. And those of you that write fantastic scripts, we thank you for that as well. And everyone that is responsible for the final product. Thanks, guys. Keep watching. Check it out. And I'm sorry for all the times I missaid, the things that I missaid. But you know what I was saying. Come on. Y'all know what I'm saying, right? Like, it just is. Have a great, great rest of the weekend, and thank you, Nikita, as always. It's always been a pleasure, and I'm always so grateful that we get to do this. It was a good show, and I can't wait to talk about the other episodes.
Thank you, Jewel. I feel the same. You know, I couldn't do this without you, and you all have to realize we're introverts, so we must really love this. We want to talk about the movies that we see, the shows that we see, the books that we read, and even the music that we listen to. And we'd like to see how other people feel about it, and what they see and what they hear. And does it really matter? It matters to us. Entertainment is not only just a release, but it also allows your imagination to move forward, right? My friend Jewel is like one of the smartest people I know, real talk. And when we talk about these things, I love that we're either on the same page most of the time. And sometimes I'm like, oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that, you know. And sometimes she's like that with me. But we are symbiotic in the things that we enjoy. We enjoy science fiction. This is good science fiction. I think it's coming back into, you know, a good place. You hear me say all the time, I don't like to watch the same thing over and over again. Alien Earth is not the same thing over and over again. It's a prequel. It's brilliant. It's a jump scare. It's been a minute since I've been super scared. Okay. You know, I love Predator and that's unnerving. And fact of the matter, he's not the most attractive creature. But that eyeball, I hope he gets a series because that eyeball is doing things. Okay. Makes me not want to eat any more calamari though. So it's very disturbing. Okay. And I'm glad that the sheep is okay. I'm so happy that the sheep was not harmed. But I think that you will find when we get to the end, you're going to be saying the same thing we said. I hope there's a season two. So as we close out this episode of Alien Earth, episodes 1 and 4 with the Blurred Words segment of BBOL, we want to thank you for showing up. Every Saturday when we do show this, and make sure you check out the Rewind where we talk about, you know, books we're watching, movies we're watching, books we're reading, movies we're watching, and everything in between. We hope you enjoy listening to us, and we hope you tune back in as we go through episodes 4 through 8 of Alien Earth. Jewel?
Bye!
Ciao, ciao, everybody. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Wrap up. Fall is here. And, you know, keep watching movies. Keep reading books. Keep listening to music. Keep having your joy. Bye.